There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
83 minutes into the early kickoff in the Premier League. Liverpool taking on Stoke. Mark Archer's watching this one for us.
Yeah, a couple minutes remaining. It's still Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0. Got to be fair, it hasn't been a great match. Liverpool, obviously, their mind has drifted to their midweek match over in Rome. And a couple of good chances in the first half to Mo Salah. He couldn't convert, which is a surprise for him. And a couple of half chances also to Stoke City. But not much to talk about in the second half to date. It looks as though Stoke City would probably be quite happy with the point as it stands. So 6 minutes remaining at Anfield. Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0.
Right, stay tuned, because just after 6 o'clock, or at 6 o'clock, we'll be crossing over to Adam Bridge for commentary of our 6 o'clock kickoff local time here, Southampton against Bournemouth. It's the South Coast Derby. Adam joins us live on the line now. And Adam, Southampton, I suppose if they don't get any points from this one, then we'll be staring down more of a barrel.
I feel like we've been saying that for probably about the last 3 months, in all honesty, and they've not managed it so far. I suppose they're the one side of the bottom three currently that have that little bit of hope, in the sense they've got four games left to play. You would pick out today as being a fairly crucial one. They go to Everton next weekend, and then in the final week of the season, they're away at Swansea before entertaining Man City on the final day of the campaign. So you would probably target this one and that game against Swansea as the opportunity to garner the 6 points that they may well need to give themselves a chance to survive. But then when you've won as few games as they have throughout this season, 5 in total, you're asking them to win 2 or 3 out of the last 4. You maybe are asking a little bit too much.
Mark Hughes has labelled this one a must-win match, rather predictably. So who's he gone with to win it for him?
Well, surprisingly, having played Long and Austin together up front last time out in the Cup semi-final, he's dropped Shane Long today and he's gone back to just playing Charlie Austin up top. Looks like it's going to be a little bit more attacking, in the sense there's a 3-4-3 formation here. So the couple of changes are the arrival of Nathan Redmond into the side. He replaces Højbjerg and Dusan Tadic in as well. So he's going with the back three as expected, then four across the middle, Romeo and Lamina, the two central midfielders, with Redmond and Tadic providing the support to Charlie Austin. Austin up top. I think there are a lot of Southampton fans and people that maybe expected and hoped that you'd actually see Long and Austin together, because they need to win against Leicester recently away, in a game where Leicester were fairly unadventurous. He again started with Long and then replaced him with Austin as the game went on. Never does he seem keen on playing the two up top, apart from in that Cup semi-final last weekend. Of course, that all came to no avail. But once more, you just get the feeling that Hughes is going safety first here. And I don't know, I don't think he wants on his record that he potentially could take the same two teams down in a relegation season. It's never been done before by anyone in the Premier League, and yet if Stoke and Southampton go, that's a record that I don't think Mark Hughes would want.
Obviously a great rivalry, a South Coast rivalry between Southampton and Bournemouth. Bournemouth, I'm sure, would like to be the party poopers for Southampton, wouldn't they?
They certainly would. I mean, I noticed on social media earlier it was called a derby. It's not a derby. They tell you off round here if you say that it's a derby. As far as they're concerned, their derby is against Portsmouth. However, it is the South Coast Classico. There's no two ways about that. That's its proper name. I think they would love it. And I mean, everyone's talking about the fact that they still need points to survive. I think, you know, we're pretty clear that they're safe where they are. And maybe, you know, Eddie Howe and Bournemouth and the way the club is run is an example, actually, to everybody as to how it should be done. Southampton obviously are on manager number 6 in the last 6 years, while Bournemouth have had Eddie Howe. And time again, if you go to Christmas, you know, Bournemouth were in the bottom 3 and Southampton were 5 places above them. But was there any panic in the Bournemouth boardroom? No, there wasn't. They said, actually, we have faith that Eddie Howe is the man to get us out of trouble here. And Eddie Howe has got them out of trouble and got them possibly to a top 10 finish again. So I think they would love to have that moment of potentially condemning Southampton to the Championship.
Adam, just want to get your thoughts on Eddie Howe. Obviously, there's a vacant spot in North London now. Arsenal have got parted ways finally with Arsene Wenger. Is Eddie Howe a contender for that job?
Realistically, I don't think he is. No, I don't think Arsenal have any intention of ploughing the British managerial market to try and find Wenger's replacement. I think they're very much looking abroad. I think they're looking at the likes of, if Tuchel wasn't going to end up going to PSG, I think they'll be looking at the likes of him. They're certainly looking at Enrique. I just think they have no desire to go British because they don't think that's the way forward. They obviously were fairly groundbreaking when they hired Arsene Wenger those 22 years ago, and I think that's the pathway that they will look to try and tread again. And it's interesting because there's a few people who've talked about someone like Antonio Conte being a perfect example of a candidate to fill Arsene Wenger's shoes. But however good Howe is, and we've seen what he can do on, and I'm not going to say limited resource because they've splashed the cash at times, Bournemouth, but what they do is they stand by him, and time again he sticks to his principles, and whatever trouble Bournemouth find themselves in, he gets them out of it. So he's got those credentials and those qualities, but I'm not sure it's what Arsenal are looking for.
Adam, another big football story coming out of London this week was the potential purchase of Wembley for a rumoured £800 million. Just want to get your thoughts on the story. What's happening there behind the scenes? What's the chat about this potential purchase of Wembley taking over from the FA?
Well, I think a row's brewing, and that will be a row between the old farts and invariably those who are forward-thinking when it comes to how Wembley should be run. Because you'll get the traditionalists, and there's a few of those, like the Ken Bates of this world, shouting their mouth off saying you have to have a national stadium. It is not the national stadium. It wasn't the national stadium that's been there since the 1920s. It's not the national stadium that England won the World Cup in. It is a stadium that was built, has brought a tremendous millstone of debt around the FA's neck. It means the FA Cup semi-final finals are played there, which I don't agree with myself. It means that all England games are played there, which again, you get a lifeless atmosphere, particularly for some of the friendlies. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to clear the debt, invest in grassroots football, which is a real problem over here in terms of quality and pitches, and actually to take the England side on the road again, to get the FA Cup semi-finals back at places like Villa Park and Old Trafford and stuff like that, and turn Wembley back into that special place. The FA are not very good at running businesses. They're very good at running football, well, sometimes, but they're not very good at running businesses. It's been proven time and time again, so let's let someone make some money out of that. They will still get a good chunk of revenue from it. It'll clear all their debts, and hopefully we can invest in the future of the game. But I'll sit on the fence on that one if you want me to.
Mr. Bridge calling the game for 6 o'clock local time here. So it is the South Close Classico. Who's going to win it?
I think it'll be a draw because invariably between these two sides it is. Bournemouth's record's not great against Southampton. There is an element of, you know, when you are finally staring down the barrel that all of a sudden you come to the party. That's what Southampton need to have today. It's that flight or fear moment. I just don't see it coming because they've been so poor this season. So I think it'll be a draw and it could well be the first of those final nails in their coffin.
All right, that's good to know.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much indeed for your time this afternoon, Adam. Enjoy it.
Cheers.
Big thanks to Adam Bridge. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're down to Saudi Arabia to catch up with Robbie Greenfield.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Game on, indeed. Game on in the Premier League. It is Liverpool against Stoke. No goals in this one, but there are 6.5 minutes of extra time. We're about halfway through that one. Still 0-0 in that one. And we'll keep an eye on that for you. Let's go down under now. Mark Archer's keeping an eye on all things AFL.
Yeah, plenty of action down under, Tom. It's AFL round 6. Let me give you a rundown of the scores this weekend. Yesterday, the Western Bulldogs had a 21-point victory against the winless and hapless Carlton Blues, 80 points to 59. The Blues have had a terrible start this season. They have yet to win a game after six rounds of the AFL. Earlier today, the Sydney Swans defeated the Geelong Cats in Geelong by 17 points, 86 to 69, to move into a top four position in the AFL. The Cats are currently ninth, which is a low position for them. They've been one of the more consistent teams in recent years. Etihad Stadium earlier today, Port Adelaide were too good for North Melbourne. Kangaroos are 102 to 69. And the last match this afternoon saw the first place team, the Greater Western Suburbs Giants, had a convincing win against Brisbane Lions, 77 to 43. Got some audio though, Tom. Let's have a quick listen to the...
No, before we do that, we're going to come back to that one in just a few minutes' time. But I just need to bring in Robbie Greenfield. He's on the time clock at the moment. Okay, so we've got to fit him in, if that's okay.
Let's go there.
Okay, let's get down to Robbie Greenfield because he is the half of the plan that is Sports Night each and every weeknight between 7 and 9. But he's not here in the UAE at the moment. He is, however, on the end of the phone. Robbie, good evening to you. Where are you?
Tom, I am in Saudi Arabia. First time out over here in 13 years living in the Middle East, and I've had a bizarre day, to say the least. I have bumped into Ernie Els in the hotel breakfast. I have bumped into Andrew Beef Johnson on a Beat the Pro event, which is not something you do every day in Saudi Arabia, but there's a rather big announcement upcoming in the next 10 or 15 minutes or so pertaining to the European Tour and pertaining to an event scheduled for January the 31st until February the 3rd, 2019, which will see the European Tour visit Saudi Arabia. It's all part of Vision 2030, this expansive, ambitious project that the Saudi government are undertaking to, I suppose, enlarge their boundaries, grow sport, grow golf, grow commerce, tourism, you name it. It's all part of the plan, and golf is a large component of that. The European Tour is heading to Saudi Arabia.
In terms of the courses down there, I don't know much about them. Obviously, you found out more in the last few days. What are the courses like?
I played the course this morning that the tournament will be hosted on, Royal Greens Golf and Country Club. It was inaugurated this morning with a few first tee shots from the likes of Ernie Els, from Beef Johnston. We had some ladies from the Ladies European Tour down here as well, Amy Bolden, Camilla Lanath, and Maha Hadoui as well, the number one ranked Arab female in the world of golf. And the course, I'll tell you this, it is a stern test of golf. It was plenty enough of a test for me in my ropey old golf game, that was for sure. I think I shot about 120 on it, so I've got the maximum course record out here at the moment. We've seen a few good scores come in. It's a breezy venue. It's right on the Red Sea coast. It's a stunning setup. They're going to change a few new tee boxes for the tournament, which will take place early next year, as I mentioned. But other than that, Tom, it's a bizarre, surreal, but also very high level venue for this tournament.
Potential growth of the game in Saudi Arabia, is it seen as a growth market?
I'm hearing all sorts of numbers that are bandied around which are eye-watering. 30 new golf courses over the course of the next 5 years are on the plan. There is growth involved, of course. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to make it's slightly more accessible in Saudi Arabia. It's difficult to get visas to get into the country. It's a time-consuming process. So I think there is a view to loosening that up and to making it a lot more accessible, because when they're hosting events like this, they're obviously going to want to attract tourists. And that is a different set of challenges for them. But they're going to embrace it, Tom. And it's an exciting time. It feels like a new era. It is the largest country in the GCC, and this is a historical moment in the history, not only of golf, but of sport in Saudi.
Roberto, did you get to bring out the clubs and strike the irons out there in Saudi? I think I saw on your Instagram you were on the course, I believe, with Beef. Did he give you any swing tips?
Beef hit a beautiful shot within about 5 feet, and I carved mine into the Red Sea, Ross, which basically sums up exactly how my golf game went. I have not done any I've done a disservice to the golf course is what I've done. But, gentlemen, I'm going to have to leave you because there is a press conference starting and my presence is required.
Thank you very much indeed, Robbie Greenfield. We'll have more from Robbie as he reports back from these big developments, shifts in opinions down there in Saudi Arabia with the announcement, a large announcement about to get underway of the future of golf in Saudi Arabia. Big news.
Big news indeed, yes. We haven't, you know, in recent years we haven't talked about much sport originating out of Saudi Arabia. Now they have a European Tour golf event. It looks like, given those dates that Robbie said, it's going to be scheduled after the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. Then it's the Saudi Arabian event, and then it looks like the Dubai Desert Classic will finish in the first week of February. So big news in the world of golf and big news in the world of Saudi sport.
Speaking of Saudi sport, they're in the World Cup as well. So they've been
playing the opening match in the World Cup.
Opening match in the World Cup. And then there's a tasty match. I believe their second match is going to be against Egypt, which will have big, big implications for a lot of people out here, a lot of football fans for both those country sides.
Speaking of Egypt, Mo Salah has failed to get on the scoreboard. The match at Anfield, the early kickoff in today's
useless.
Premier League. Rubbish, isn't he?
He's awful.
Hey, sell him again. Chelsea. Did you hear Mourinho's comments this week? Oh, I didn't sell him at Chelsea. Well, of course, you're the manager.
Yeah,
you know, someone sold him.
He didn't. He didn't. Someone else bent his arm.
Of course, it was never Mourinho. But yeah, it's finished full-time at Anfield in the early kickoff today. It's Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0. Obviously, Liverpool now will move on to that midweek match, the second leg of the Champions League against Roma. And it's probably a good point for Stoke City as they try to avoid relegation. So, wasn't much of a match, Tom, that... didn't really deliver any great heights or great moments. A couple of chances to Mo Salah. He failed to score. Offside goal to Danny Ings. So it was Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0.
I interrupted you rather rudely there because you were talking all things AFL, and I had to get us down to Saudi Arabia to speak to Robbie Greenfield before he popped into this press conference.
Yeah, I was just giving you an update of round six. A couple of results I didn't get a chance to bring you earlier before we spoke to Robbie was the Hawthorn Hawks were too good today for St Kilda, 89-54. The other result I didn't bring you was the Adelaide Crows. They defeated the Gold Coast Suns, 110-62. Now, the big result yesterday was the Western Bulldogs, 21-point victory over Carlton Blues. Now, Carlton Blues was one of the former, well, great clubs in the AFL, but they've had a terrible couple of seasons, and they haven't won a game this season so far. So their coach, Brendan Bolton, had this to say as he reflects on the terrible start to the season for Carlton. No, he doesn't.
it's that bad.
It's that bad. He didn't have any comments to
say.
That
bad. You know, he's lost for words. That's how bad it is.
Totally lost for words. Yeah. And we've lost the connection there. But, yeah, terrible start for Carlton Blues. They had the 21-point loss yesterday to Western Bulldogs, and they are really struggling. They're 18th out of 18 teams in the AFL. It's been a terrible season for them.
We will try and locate that piece of audio for you. Take a short break now. When we come back, we're around the grounds to find out what's to look forward to in terms of the forthcoming kickoffs in the Premier League across Europe and in the world of rugby and cricket as well. So stay tuned to Dubai Island 3.8.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Do get in touch with the show. You can text us right now on 4001. Equally, you can have your say by giving us a call, and the studio will put you through to our broadcast position, our satellite broadcast position down here at Barasti, where the game is always on. Big thanks to all the team down at Barasti for looking after us. Hector over there enjoying all
curly fries.
The curly fries.
The hamburger.
That is supplied by the team down here. So big thanks to all the team down here at Barasti. What's going on in the world of sport? Well, we've just had the culmination of the first game in the Premier League this afternoon. No goals in that, is that right?
No goals, yeah. Early kickoff was at Anfield, where Liverpool obviously suffering a hangover from their great result during the week. Champions League semi-final victory 5-2 against Roma. They've struck nothing against Stoke City. 0-0 the final score at Anfield. Stoke are probably happy with the point as they try and battle out of the relegation zone. Liverpool will stay third in the Premier League. So full-time Anfield, Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0.
Let's get over to the clay courts, the world of tennis. One man dominating.
Well, we're going to start with the women. We're actually going to head to Istanbul. Polina Hergok defeats Maria Sakkari 6-4, 6-2 to advance in the semifinals. Elsewhere, American Coco Vandeweghe taking on French lady Caroline Garcia in the Porsche Tennis Grand Prix Praxic, and Carolina Pliskova taking on Annette Konevit. That will take place later tonight, so we'll keep you up to date with that on our Twitter at Dubai Eye Sport. And then Mr. Rafael Nadal, the number one seed, he is in the semis against the number four seed, David Goffin. Also in the second set going on right now, Pablo Basta is down 5-7. He lost the first set to Stefanos Tsitsipas, and then the second set they are tied 2 games apiece. So we'll bring you up to date with that as that one ends. And elsewhere in the Hungarian Open, John McMillan of Australia defeated Yannick Madden 2-6, 6-1, 6-4.
Let's get to the rugby now. Mark Archer's keeping an eye on the games that are underway.
Yeah, there's a live match taking place in the French top 14. It's top clash there between Toulon, currently second. They are taking on Casts, and they have a good lead just going into halftime, 31-6. Tries to Tusofa, Issa, and Ma Nonu for Toulon, but they're looking very comfortable in that match. Results earlier today in Super Rugby, we saw the Queensland Reds had a great victory against the Lions at Suncorp Stadium, 27-22. The Jaguares from Argentina travelled to Auckland and defeated the Blues, 20-13. The Crusaders had a victory against the Brumbies, 21-7. Late kickoff tonight is the Bulls taking on the Highlanders. That's a 7:15 kickoff from Pretoria.
I've got the West Country Derby to look forward to.
We have indeed, yes. Yes, indeed. We have the Gloucester, your very beloved Cheering Whites, at home to Bath. That's a 6 o'clock kickoff. There's 3 matches today in the Aviva Premiership. Exeter Chiefs host Sale Sharks. Worcester take on Harlequins. Great result last night, Tom. It's been a wonderful season for Newcastle. Often stragglers in the Aviva Premiership, but they had a dramatic win against their playoff rivals, Leicester Tigers, 25 points to 23. Newcastle are now third in the Premiership table and looking pretty good for a playoff spot.
Real Sociedad taking on Athletic Bilbao at 6:15 this evening, and then Real Madrid are in action a little later on. They're taking on Leganes at 8:30. Underway in the Bundesliga, no early goals to report for you there. Five games underway. Bayern Munich already been crowned the champions of the Bundesliga. They're taking on Frankfurt at home at the moment. That early kickoff in Spain, Espanyol against Las Palmas, finished one apiece in that one. There was also an earlier game over in Scotland where it finished Hamilton 2, Ross County 0. Hibs against Kilmarnock, Motherwell against Dundee, St Johnstone against Partick Thistle, all kicking off at 6 o'clock this evening over in Scotland. Right, Mr. Ross Crist, take me to the United States of America.
Oh, man, I wish we could just board the plane right now and head on down into Dallas, where this past weekend was the NFL draft. This is big, big news back home, guys. Everyone gears up to see who their team will pick in the first round. All these boys coming out of colleges and universities from across America. And in the first round, well, I'll actually let this one play out for you.
With the first pick in the 2018 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield, quarterback, Oklahoma.
Baker Mayfield there getting selected by the Cleveland Browns with the number one overall pick. The quarterback from Oklahoma playing out there in Norman. He's a Heisman winner. He's done some great things for that program, and he's hoping to change his Cleveland Browns franchise because they have had more quarterbacks than I've had ex-girlfriends since 1999. They run through them. They have just not had the best luck in the draft, in the league. But hopefully this guy can bring a winning pedigree that he brought, had it down at Oklahoma, and he comes into Cleveland. They had two picks in the top five, Mark Archer. So, I mean, they've
had a lot of top picks in the last few years. And they don't seem to pick the right players. And it's always the problem with the draft. There's a lot of money at stake. You've got to make the right picks, the right players. Teams are jockeying for position, trying to fill needs. That big squads that they're trying to fill, and the multi-million dollar decisions that the GMs and the directors of football are faced with, you know, year in, year out when they get around to draft time, Ross.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield said he really liked what the Cleveland Browns had in their organization. He thinks he has what it takes to flip the script for the Cleveland Browns.
I think just telling my story, you know, just my journey of why I have a chip on my shoulder, why I work so hard. I think there's a lot of things that they didn't know, which is perfectly okay. So I told them those stories, and I was confident in it, and I was just myself. And so then combining that with also just sitting down and talking ball. It's a fresh start first, so it's not like I'm, you know, thinking, focusing on something from behind in the past. So for me, it's proven exactly why I'm here. I'm here for a reason, and I want to be great. I've always competed at the highest level and enjoyed it, so I want to leave my mark and my legacy on the game.
He wants to leave his mark and his legacy on the game. Big news coming out of the first round is quarterback Josh Rosen from the UCLA Bears. He made some big news, Mark Archer, and not quite in a good way, coming out yapping his mouth, saying that nine teams before them made a mistake by not drafting him. What are your thoughts on that one, big man?
Well, I think he's put a bit of a mark on his back of his helmet, hasn't he, when he's come out in the season. He was one player expected to be drafted a lot higher. He ended up falling to 10th in the draft. He's gone to Arizona, and he's got a pretty good chance of playing quite quickly at Arizona. I think Carson Palmer is towards the end of his career there.
And
he's had some injury issues in the last couple of seasons, so there's a good chance he's going to start and get some game time. But he's come out and been pretty vocal about a disappointment of falling that far in the draft. So that's what's happened. It'll be an interesting season for that young man.
Yeah, he comes into the Arizona Cardinals team. Carson Palmer, newly retired, and they have Sam Bradford now on that staff coming over from Minnesota. But will he start right away? This is a guy who's projected to be the number one overall pick. A lot of people thought maybe the Browns would take him. Well, he's coming in with a chip on his shoulder, and he kind of clarified his comments yesterday, so a little bit backing off from what he said initially on the initial draft day.
Just for you, the bold comments last night about the teams in front of you making mistakes. Where does that confidence come from in the playing with your chip on your shoulder? How do you How do you plan to take that in your career?
I was a little emotional last night. I would actually say that I'm not as angry that there were nine guys ahead of me, just the three quarterbacks. That's kind of what gets to me. There are three big mistakes ahead of me, but honestly, it's a blessing in disguise. This is an unbelievable, unbelievable team that I think is really, really primed and set to do some incredible things in the future. And I think I just very simply lucked out.
Lucked out indeed. He goes to a franchise that's had some success in the playoffs, have made it to the Super Bowl, losing to the Steelers. They have a Google organization out there in Arizona, certainly playing in some good weather. So it won't be too big of a transition for him coming over from California.
Hey, he could be in Cleveland.
Yeah, he could. That's exactly right. Well, you know, for those of you sitting at home wondering, why is it a big deal? Well, who cares if you go 10th? Who cares if you go first? Well, the big thing is money, of course. The higher you get picked, the more money you make. There's a lot of rounds in this draft. There's a lot of things that go into the draft. It's a big, big thing. One of the things that's popular about the draft is no matter what, you always boo your pick draft day. It's a very, very unique circumstance. But for those of you sitting at home, we have a 411 to you for what is the NFL draft.
Every year, the best college players in the country are picked by NFL teams. But first, they're invited to show off their skills and strengths in a series of physical and mental tests at the NFL Combine. They do so in order to impress key personnel at each of the NFL teams and hope they might be picked by one of the teams at the three-day NFL draft. During the draft, each of the 32 teams receives at least one draft pick in each of the seven rounds. The order of draft selection is determined by the reverse order of finish from the previous season. In order to keep the NFL as competitive as possible, the team with the worst record picks first in each round, with the Super Bowl champion picking last. Teams can trade these picks with each other for future picks or players in order to improve their draft position. Then each team has a time limit to make their draft pick. While the coveted number one overall pick is expected to be a future NFL star, in every draft, any late round pick can go on to become the next Russell Wilson. You just never know.
Well, there you have it. You could be the next Russell Wilson. You just never know. So there are a couple rounds in the draft, and there's a lot of players who go undrafted. Some of the best NFL players never even get drafted. They get signed as free agents out of school. So it'll be interesting to see if these young guys can make it for their team. Side note, gentlemen, I'm going to gloat here. I'm going to gloat. My cousin drafted in the first round, Hayden Hurst, by my arch-rival Baltimore Ravens. So congrats to Hayden making it to the Ravens squad. Tight end, he brings a world of experience coming over from the South Carolina Gamecocks. So hats off to Hayden. My third cousin, my mother told me this past weekend. So way to go, Hayden. Hats off to you. Elsewhere, let's switch sports, guys. Let's switch disciplines because we are in full swing in baseball. I'll go over some of the scores really quickly, just run through some of the things happening on the diamond. The Cubs are off to their winning ways. They're their 13-10 record. They defeated the Milwaukee Brewers 3-2. Straub picks up the win. He goes to 3-0 on the season. The Orioles defeated the Detroit Tigers 6-0 to move to 7-19 on the season. Tillman picks up the win there. The Nationals dropped to the Diamondbacks 5-4. Goodley picked up the win there. My Pittsburgh Pirates beat rival St. Louis Cardinals in 11 innings. Contos gets the win there. He goes to 2-2. The Philadelphia Phillies beat the Atlanta Braves 7-3. The Texas Rangers defeat the Toronto Blue Jays north of the border up in Toronto 6-4. Miner picks up the win there. The Tampa Bay Rays go to 11-13 in the season. They defeat the red-hot Boston Red Sox 4-3. Boston moves to 19-6 on the season. They have a great record. I believe it's the best record in all of baseball. The Cleveland Indians defeated the Seattle Mariners 6-5. Corey Kluber picks up the win. He goes to 4-1 on the season. The Colorado Rockies defeated the Miami Marlins 1-0. Derek Jeter has come out and said his Marlins are not tanking this year, despite facts and reports coming out of South Beach that the Marlins are in it to lose this year to get higher draft picks. The Reds defeated the Twins 15-9. Hernandez picks up the win. The Athletics defeated the Houston Astros 8-1. Manana picks up the win. He goes to 4-2 on the season. The White Sox beat the Royals 7-4. This was in Kansas City. And the Yankees defeated the Angels 4-3 to win their seventh in a row. The Yankees have been playing very well as of late. Gregorius plays hero for their win last night. Then two nights ago, it was all Gabby Sanchez.
Deep to left field. Fair ball. The game's over. See ya. A walk-off three-run home run for Gary Sanchez. The Yankees have come all the way back, and they win this one 4-3.
Now take it in, folks. Is this the thing that starts the Yankees for one of those magical runs here? What a great way to end the game and head on to the West Coast.
Gary Sanchez doing good work there for the Bronx Bombers. Elsewhere, the New York Mets won 5-1 against the San Diego Padres. DeGrom picks up the win. He goes to 3-0 in the season, 2.06 ERA. And the final game of the night, big rivalry game here, Los Angeles Dodgers dropping to the San Francisco Giants 6-4. Dyson picks up the win. Strickland picks up the save. It's a 6 on the season, and the Giants move to 12-13. That's the update from the baseball diamond for you, Tommy.
Thank you very much indeed. Qualifying underway over in Azerbaijan for the Grand Prix. Pierre Gasly at full speed has nearly hit his teammate Brendan Hartley, who had a puncture and was going slowly on track but in the middle of the racing line. We've had a couple that have been cut out of qualifying out in Q1. Van Duren, Gasly, Ericsson, Hartley and Grosjean out in Q2. Stroll, Sirotkin, Alonso, Leclerc and Magnussen. Kimi Raikkonen still fastest at the end of Q1 and Q2 into Q3 now. And Danny Ricciardo has just scraped through into the third element of qualifying in 10th place. Nico Hülkenberg also into Q3, but we'll have a 5-place grid penalty. Keep an eye on that one for you down in Baku. And of course, we build up to our 6 o'clock kickoffs. We have got live coverage from Adam Bridge and the rest of the TalkSport team of Southampton against Bournemouth. What did he call it a minute ago? The South Coast...
El Clasico.
Clasico. South Coast Clasico. Okay. So that's what you got. It's not a derby, apparently. You can't call it a derby. Southampton against Bournemouth, 6 o'clock. Also, 4 other games. Any goals going in, you will hear them right here on Dubai I-1 3-pointer. And stay tuned, 8:30, Swansea against Chelsea. We'll have more build-up to this in just a few moments.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Fascinating week of sport. One story we haven't had enough time to talk about and probably haven't done enough justice is the news from one of the all-time greats of Barcelona Football Club, who rather tearfully has announced that he will be retiring from the club at the end of the year. Iniesta is a name that will be eternally be related to the club. And whilst he's always been, you know, something of that motor in the middle of midfield, he's also scored some screamers during his time.
Jesus Navas trying to get into full flight. Spanish are outnumbered in the Netherlands half, but they still kept the ball with Iniesta. Now Torres. Iniesta's in the middle. Torres is trying to find him. It's broken for Fabregas. Now it's Iniesta. This is it. That's the goal. Spain have surely won the World Cup.
Iniesta, great for club, great for country as well. And he's announced, hasn't he, that he doesn't want to play anymore in Europe because he can't bear the idea of playing against Barcelona.
No, so it looks as though he's decided to make a smart decision and go to China instead because he doesn't want to play against Barcelona. But what a player, what a Rolls-Royce machine in the middle of the park and made everything very effortless. 32 trophies, 700 appearances. For Barcelona. He joined the club when he was 12 years old.
One club man, yeah?
Yeah, amazing. But I remember back at Wembley when Manchester United got defeated by Barcelona in that Champions League final 2011, and he was part of that midfield sort of tandem there. Xavi and with Messi up front, and they just basically didn't give Manchester United a kick. They hardly got the ball. He was that true sort of tiki-taka style, wasn't he? He was get the ball, pass the ball, move pass, and they could just dominate possession and score, as you say, score some good goals, but won everything in the game. Over 100 caps for Spain. He's won World Cups. He's won Champion Leagues. He's won the Liga. he's pretty much won it all. And good luck to him. He'll go and have a season or two over in China and be a better man for it.
Yep, as will his bank balance as well, I'm sure. He'll go off to China. Not to the States, though. He'd sort of fit into the States, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to come stateside. I think I'm going to agree with the reports that he's going to head out to the Far East, head out to China. One man who came out this week and said he wants to end his career in L.A., De Bruyne from Manchester City. I mean, he signed, a brand-new five-year deal this year, making him one of the highest-paid paid players in the league. His agent came out this week and said his client does want to finish his career in Los Angeles. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes at the end of this five-year contract. So, yeah, I think the twilight years for soccer players now, it's coming between America and China. China's the number two bidder.
Stay tuned, because coming up in just a few minutes' time, you have got the South Coast Classico. Southampton take on Bournemouth. Adam Bridge is your match commentator for that just after 6 o'clock. Straight after that is Swansea against Chelsea, but also from 6 o'clock this evening. Any goals in the Burnley-Brighton, Crystal Palace-Leicester, Huddersfield-Everton and Newcastle-West Brom games, as and when they go in, you will get them first here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Big thanks to all the team on the ground here, live from Barasti. Big thanks to all of our guests joining us live and, of course, on the phone throughout the last couple of hours. To Hector, to Benji and all the team here, to Elaine back in the studio, and, of course, to the Grill panellists as well. Ross, Chris, thanks so much indeed.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tom. Thanks to all the listeners out there. We love all our listeners. Thanks for texting us, and make sure you follow us on our social media at Dubai Eye Sport. You can get in touch with me at Ross Talks. And don't forget, on Monday night, we have a brand-new pub quiz. The boys will be at Perry and Blackwater's doing Monday Night Football. So you can go meet Chris McCarty, Robbie Greenfield, and then come on in, take part of the pub quiz. It starts at 8 o'clock. We'd love to see you there.
Thanks very much indeed for that. And to you, Mark Archer. Safe flight.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, off to experience some travel this evening. Quick update from Baku. It's the final stages of qualifying for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. I can tell you no surprises there. Currently, with still a few minutes to go in that final qualifying, Sebastian Vettel currently holding pole position, followed closely by Lewis Hamilton.
All right, thanks very much indeed to all of you for your patronage over the last couple of hours. That's it from myself, Tom Urquhart, Ross Chris, and of course Mark Archer. Arch, I'm going downstairs to watch the West Country Derby. It is Bath against Gloucester from King's Home. Two words for rugby lovers and listeners out there. If I mention the word King's Home to you, what's the phrase that comes to mind?
The shed.
The shed.
Their thoughts, really. For players playing in front of it, it's no coincidence we do our warm-up lap in front of the shed. When we do that, you can really feel the passion.
Not just the shed, but the crowd in general makes it a great place to play. Also makes it a place that's very hard to come to and very hard to leave if you've been here for a long time. And there's a reason behind why players like myself, Hazy, Pete Buxton, Sinbad have been here for so long.
You hear about the shed and you hear about the experience that you get when you come to King's Home. It's a massive rugby culture here, and that's what lured me over here.
And the strength of the pound, obviously.
Cut.
My grandma used to bring me down, stand me in the shed, obviously cover my ears when the language got a bit blue.
It's gone full circle, hasn't it? Now we have to cover the academy kids' ears with your language.
Well, you said that, not me, mate. It's nice to actually you watch it and you think, oh, I'd love to play it one day, and to actually get on the field and play for Gloucester is a dream come true for me, really.
I actually missed the question, sorry.
You didn't get one?
Yeah, you didn't get one.
I didn't really know what to expect from the crowd because I heard so much about it, but my first warm-up, I ran across the shed, and that was probably the biggest thing I'll probably take back to Australia.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.